Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Not too many people live a life so incredible that a Hollywood movie is made about them. Well, once you've heard the story of my next guest, you'll understand why his story is on the big screen. Sam Childers is a former drug-dealing criminal and ex-bikie gang member. His father persistently told him he was going to be killed eventually. Sam actually started to believe this and became worried. Cue the astonishing transformation. Sam sought to re-establish his relationship with God and then found an unexpected calling to be the saviour of hundreds of kidnapped and orphaned children. Obedient to that calling, he built an orphanage in southern Sudan and stood up against the Lord's Resistance Army, leading armed missions to rescue children. 15 years later, the orphanage is the largest in southern Sudan and has fed and housed over 1,000 children. Sam Childers is known as the Machine Gun Preacher on a movie screen near you. Sam, welcome to Open House.
Hey, welcome, welcome.
It's a great privilege to meet you. You were always in trouble as a boy, weren't you?
Yeah. I was always getting inside of some kind of trouble. My dad said, if there's trouble around, you'll find it, won't you, boy?
Your father was a tough man?
Yeah. He was a really tough guy. Now, he was spirit-filled, born-again Christian. Never seen him ever drink or anything like that all my life. You know?
Former Marine.
Yeah, and he was pretty rough when he was younger, they said. You used to drink a lot and everything.
And he used to say to you, boy, someone's going to kill you.
Yeah, he'd say, boy, someone's going to kill you one of these days. And I
Why
heard
did
that
he say
from,
that?
You know, I was always fighting. I was just always fighting. I was always, and it was always, always when the odds... Okay, it was against me. It seems like a lot of people's going to fight when the odds is for them. But I was always doing it the opposite way, you know.
Why?
Little guy. I always felt if you were going to get into a fight wasn't going to be a fight unless it was somebody bigger than you. And I fought a lot. The actual book, if you notice the name, is called Another Man's War.
Yes.
When you read it, it seems like all my life I was always fighting for someone else. I could never stand a bully. I could never stand someone picking on someone. And I'd always go after those kind, it seemed like, growing up, you know.
Tell us where that all led you then through those early years.
At a very young age, I started doing drugs. I was raised in probably the perfect family. And born again, spirit-filled, had a little bit of money, okay? But at 11 years old, I chose on my own free will some bad decisions, and I started smoking cigarettes, started smoking marijuana. 13 years old, I'm experimenting with alcohol and doing some pills and stuff. All of a sudden, at 15 years old, it wasn't cool no more. I didn't care if I looked cool or looked older. Here it turns into addiction, and I'm actually putting a needle in my arm. And then all of a sudden, it went from that to selling drugs. Not a little bit, but selling drugs at a lot. And then it went from that to working and stuff as like a hired gun at drug deals.
I went
as deep and as far as you could go into the darkness. I was there. But one thing I can say, my mom and dad never quit praying for me. Now I can say this. I know that God's love never stopped loving me. Christ never stopped loving me. No matter what I did, he always loved me, but I walked away from him.
That's big love, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on what you were
absolutely,
like and what you did.
Yeah.
Your dad's words started to come back to haunt you.
Yeah, I was living in Orlando, Florida, and to be honest with you, I never had a problem, okay, with dying. I still don't. But I have a problem with what I'm going to die for. If I'm going to die for something stupid, something that's not worth dying for, I don't like that. So I got into a bad bar fight inside of Florida and almost got killed, turned out to be a shootout. And on the way home that night, I said, you know what? I'm done living this lifestyle. I never gave my life to Christ. I knew what it was at the time to be a Christian. I knew that, okay? But I said, I'm done living this lifestyle. I went home. I told my wife, Lynn, at the time. I said, Lynn, we're moving. And she was excited. She was ready for a change. She wanted a change. So we moved 1,000 miles away, back and stuff to like my hometown. and we moved back to Pennsylvania. My wife started going immediately. She was from a Christian family too, but got all messed up. She started going to church immediately, okay, with my mom. And then it was 2 years later until I walked into that church and said, God, here I am.
Tell us a bit of the background of your wife pre that time.
You know, I got a hot looking wife. I didn't tell you about my wife, did I?
I've heard about this.
I got a hot looking wife. She was a stripper. She's still stripping, but just for me. But she had a rough background too. I mean, she was raised in a Christian home. Probably 15, 16 years old, she started experimenting a little bit in, you know, drugs and alcohol. And then I actually met my wife at a drug deal when she was working in a strip joint.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes people's ashamed of their testimonies. And my wife was a little bit ashamed of hers. But now she ends up going around the world and end up sharing her testimony. And I tell people all the time, if you're ashamed of what God did for you, then you're ashamed of God. So we need to tell people who we was before we knew Jesus.
I'm sure that's right, too.
Yeah.
So how long did it take for the light to dawn in her life?
You know, she started going straight to church as soon as we moved. She was waiting. You know, most people with addictions are living a very rough lifestyle. The only way to truly get delivered is you got to relocate yourself. Mm. You got to move to another area, another town, start out with new friends, because, you know, a lot of times your friends are the ones that can bring you back. They don't bring you back. It's just they come over to the house. They might be partying. They ask you over to their house and they're still partying. And all of a sudden you fall back into it.
Yeah.
You know, so I tell people that has addictions, you got to relocate yourself far away from them old friends. Now, then once you get grounded, you know, once you get grounded in the Lord and once you're able to withstand drugs and alcohol, I've been drug free and alcohol free for over 23 years. I can get around it. It don't bother me a bit. But you got to get past that point so you don't fall back in.
Yeah. As she was going to church,
yeah,
what were you saying to her and thinking,
you know,
yourself?
I was putting her through a lot of, you know what, I mean, I was hard on her. Yeah. I was hard on her. She'd come home from church and she'd be all fired up for God. And you could just see it all over the glowing. And I would start cursing her, cussing her, you know, because I was angry that she was happy and inside I'm still miserable, you know? So I put her through a lot and I wasn't nice to her for definitely a couple years.
So when did the light dawn for you?
You know, what really turned me was, and a matter of fact, it's in the book, is I woke up in the middle of the night and I could feel a presence in the room that had fear just come upon me. And when I woke up, I was literally started shaking in the bed because I was just so scared. And at the foot of my bed, my wife was at the foot of the bed praying for me. And she was praying out and screaming out to God and speaking in tongues and just saying, God, you got to change this man. And I laid there and I shook. I mean, the fear of God was upon me and the presence of God was in that room. And it was about 2 weeks later then I said to her, all right, I'll go to church with you. And I ended up going to church with her, you know, and that first night. And I love to give altar calls because you can see the people that are chained to their chair or chained to their pew. That first night, I was that person chained to the pew. Chains on my feet, chains on my hands. I just wouldn't get up. The preacher come walking right down the aisle to the back seat, and he walks up to me and he said, man, the power of God is all over you. What's your problem? And I broke in that back seat of that church. I went back to church the next night. They were like inside of almost like a 10-day revival, 15-day revival. And I went back the next night. But the next night, I wanted what I felt in that back row. But I knew if I got closer to the front, it would be better. So I went to the front seat, man.
Wow.
Sat right in that front seat. But the thing that makes me a little different, okay, than most Christians is, you know, I'm not perfect. I have a lot of problems. I got a lot of things, issues that I got to work on daily. You know, I call myself the messed up preacher. But the thing about it is when I walked in that church, I said, God, here I am. It's all yours. Use me. And that makes a big difference because, you know, a lot of times as a Christian, we only give God a little bit. We don't give him everything. You know, there's one thing, no matter how messed up you are, if you give God everything, he'll start straightening it out.
Yeah. On Open House, we're with the machine gun preacher, Sam Childers. I don't suppose you could have possibly imagined what that request to God almost could have meant for you.
I would have never dreamed. When I think back of June of 1992 is when this all started, when I walked into that church, I would have never dreamed that all of this would be happening right here today.
How did this call come to you then to go to Southern Sudan?
You know, as a very young age, okay, to start with, it was prophesied over my mom before she even conceived me that her next child was going to be a preacher and speak to the nations. And then when I was in the womb, my mom was probably 6 months pregnant, another preacher prophesied over her that the child she was carrying was going to preach to the nations. And then when I was like 5 or 6 years old, it was prophesied over her standing at an altar, holding me by the hand, over me and her, that her son was going to be a preacher. When I was 18, she thought they were all liars.
What a joke.
One thing about my mom, she never stopped praying. She never stopped praying. And I tell people all the time, you got to remember, prophecy is real, you know, and if God speaks it, it will happen. It's just sometimes we want to prolong everything. I knew at the age of 6 and 7 years old, I knew I was to be a preacher. Yeah, I knew it, but I just kept running from it, you know, and I knew it the whole way up to like 10, 11 years old. I would tell you, oh, I'm going to be a preacher, you know, and then all of a sudden 11 years old came and I got some different thoughts in my mind.
Yeah. So it was the body of a child.
Yeah.
Torn apart by a landmine.
Yeah, I went into Sudan, Africa on a 5-week mission trip. Never dreamed in the world that I would have ever went back to Sudan. I went just on a normal 5-week mission trip that changed my life. And I stood over the body of a small child. And as I stood over that body, it was probably a day or two old. And I said, God, how can this happen? This child stepped on a landmine. How can this happen around the world and we not hear about it?
Yes.
You know, there's people dying right now as we speak. In Darfur, they say there's a child dying every 4 minutes. How can this happen and we not hear about it? But I said, God, I'll do whatever it takes to help these people. Didn't realize it was going to be like this.
And then what happened?
I went back to Sudan about a year and a half later and started supporting the people pulling landmines out, helping those people. The next thing is I started up a mobile clinic, and then all of a sudden I'm driving through the jungle one day and God stops me right in the middle of the jungle. And he says, this is where I want the children's village. And it was in the middle of a war zone. You know, everyone heard about Joseph Kony, Kony 2012,
yes.
You know, so I knew that I had to do something. So I started this children's village and I just kept rescuing children. Now, we have rescued over 1,000 children. We house right now, just in Sudan alone, we have 2 small bases in Uganda, but we house about 170-some children that are definitely orphans in South Sudan. And then we have 2 bases in Uganda that we have war children.
And you'd go out searching for these kids with your machine gun.
We would go out on recons and stuff like that. With the government soldiers, the government SPLA, we would go out into the bush where there was hot areas where people were being attacked and killed. You got to remember, the book is written pre-2008. You know, things are changed a little bit now. And the movie that's out there is pre-2008. But we would go out into the village and we would find these children hiding out. They would ambush us. I mean, all the rescues were all different. I don't think there was ever one the exact same rescue.
How old were these kids?
You know, they would go from newborn all the way up. Like one time, some of my men were moving some dead bodies. And there was a mother that had a baby strapped to her. And no one realized that the baby was alive till they started moving the body. And then all of a sudden, the baby started crying. So we've brought in newborns all the way up to, you know, 15, 16-year-olds.
It's just incredibly dangerous work, though.
You know, yeah, but there again, I think just about anything is dangerous. I mean, you can go water skiing or something is dangerous, you know.
But I don't go armed with a machine gun and going into really, as you say, right, hot spots like
that.
Tell us about the dangers there.
You know, let me tell you, I've never really felt the danger, but I mean, I've been shot at many times. I've been in more gunfights in the U.S. than I probably have been in Sudan.
Yeah.
And I've never been really scared of that. But let me tell you what the rebels do. You know, not just Joseph Kony, the Lord Resistant Army, but the president of Northern Sudan. They will do everything from cut the lips off of children, cut the arms, cut the legs, nail children to trees. Some of the soldiers will actually take little babies by the ankles and bust their heads on trees, you know. So this is some of the things that you'll see, down to little boys and little girls being raped, you know. Just unbelievable things, you know. I've had people say, well, how can you as a preacher go out and pick up a gun and rescue these children? What I always ask is, how can you as a Christian stand by and let it happen?
Yeah.
You know, now, definitely Jesus Christ does not condone violence, but I don't believe he condones children being nailed to a tree.
The orphanage you built meant a great deal of personal sacrifice for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a lot of sacrifice. You know, things have really got easy the last couple of years. Our work has really grown the last 2 years. But, I mean, there was a time where I literally laid it all on the line and gave up all of my personal stuff just to make it happen. I mean, sold boats, campers, motorcycles, sold my gun collection, everything that I had in the U.S. I was selling just to make it happen.
And over there, you just slept under a mosquito net.
When it first started.
Bible in one hand, AK-47 in the other.
Yeah, well, I slept on a grass mat, and I had a Bible on one side and a machine gun on the other side. And I mean, that was how you had to do it. You know, some people say, well, I wouldn't have done it. Well, you wouldn't have been there then. You know, you wouldn't have stayed there. You wouldn't have been able to live, you know.
How close have you come to being killed?
You know, many, many times close. You know, when bullets whiz by your head, that's pretty close. You know, so, yeah, many times. But I don't ever really, you know, I don't ever really think of that or end up counting, you know, how many times. I think the biggest thing is that in the world today, we should concentrate on what we haven't done than on what we have done. You know, a lot of people, like right now, we feed. I got an AIDS orphanage in Ethiopia. I got a school I just built in Ethiopia. I got 165 kids we feed a day there. I got two bases in Uganda. I keep war children. I have a school that I feed 770 kids a day. We feed a total of about 3,500 meals a day. People think that's just great, but I can't focus on what little good I've done, because then that slows us up for doing any more, you know. So,
and when someone came to you and said, we want to make a movie out of this story,
you know, if it would have happened like that, I probably would have just fell over. What happened was Dateline NBC was doing a story on the Lord Resistant Army, Joseph Kony, in 2004. And they got a hold of me. Well, here, when they come into Sudan, I was going to do some security work for them. When they come in, they said, are you this guy? Everyone's calling, okay, the machine gun preacher. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, man, we want to switch our story around and do the story of you. So a one-hour special, they done 30 minutes on me that came out in 2005 that kind of just showed the world who I was. Our website was a small website. Crashed overnight. Everybody and their brother, you know, was emailing us. People wanted to do a documentary. They wanted to do a movie, a book, everything on my life. So it took me about a year and a half, 2 years, until some friends talked me into writing a book. So I wrote the book. The book came out spring of 2009. And immediately people were getting a hold of me about a movie and everything. But when the Dateline NBC thing first happened, I knew I had to get some good advice. So I got a hold of a preacher friend of mine, and he's the one that told me. He said, Sam, he says, normally what you do with a life like yours is you write a book. And if the book's any good, then you'll sell the movie rights. And if the movie's halfway decent, everyone's going to want to know the truth. Then you do a documentary. And that's the exact order, okay, that we went through. There's a documentary coming out soon.
When you look at those children and where they've come from and where they are now, tell me what you feel when you see that.
When you're there and you're looking at the children, I mean, for me now, you know, I'm more concentrating on their future. Like, I got two new orphanages that I'm building. One's in Uganda, one's in Ethiopia. You know, most orphanages that are in a third world country, you got to leave when you're 15 or 16 years old. So we're building two new ones. And like the one in Uganda is going to be a 4-story building. The first floor would be a restaurant, supermarket, hair salon. The second floor would be a hotel. The third floor will be a dormitory just for those older children to stay in. So we'll be able to send them to university. And they'll be able to learn a trade working in the businesses that we have. But the biggest thing is you're teaching those children how to live in the future. So I can't really look at any good that I've done in the past. You know, you got to concentrate on the future in everything. These children need to be educated, need to be taught a trade. You know, so that's where I concentrate it now.
And part of the future is going out to countries like Australia and showing your movie,
which is
changing lots of lives.
It's doing unbelievable. I mean, here in Australia, the first week when the DVDs hit the shelf, within a couple of days, it was the second best seller in Australia. And now I believe it's the first best seller. Do you realize that it is the number one pirated movie in the world?
Is it really?
Right.
Congratulations.
Now, it's right. I tell you what, I'm excited about it because people seeing about that God is still in America working business. But it was downloaded, pirated off the internet over 51 million times.
Wow.
Just in the last few weeks in Australia, as of right now, we've had over 3,200 people come to the Lord. I believe we got 2-3 more meetings, okay, before I fly out of here. I believe that we're going to hit the 3,500 mark. But just in the last year, we have had over 15,000 lives around the world changed by the message of hope, you know. And so that's awesome. You know, the movie's doing amazing things.
Sam Childers, it's a great honor to meet you and hear your story and convey it to our audience around Australia.
Praise God. Hey, everyone, check us out on Facebook. MGP Sam Childers, and you can check us out on Twitter. On Twitter, you can actually follow us around the world on Twitter. Sometimes I go off for a few weeks because when you're in the bush, you can't Twitter. You know?
Sure.
Yeah, but you can follow us on Facebook, and you know, the movie's changing lives around the world. The documentary's even going to do more because it shows who the true Sam Childers was 30 years ago. Pick the movie up, give it to somebody struggling with life. Remember, the movie is not made for religious people. It's made for Christian people to use as an outreach. It is R-rated in the U.S. Here in Australia, I think it's M15, they call it. Pick it up, give it to somebody that's struggling. It's saving lives.
It's having a huge impact. Sam, great to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
On Open House.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.